Call to order this hearing of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. We have three bills before us today, Senate File 887, Senate File 6, Senate File 238. The first order of business is to note the roll and a motion to consider the minutes. Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the minutes.
Senator Roebling, there is one correction to be made on the minutes before that happens, and that is there was not a motion, or the motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting was not reflected in these minutes. So with that correction, Senator Roebling moves approval of the minutes of the hearing on February 21st. As many as are in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved.
As Senator Rust mentioned, the first bill up for consideration is Senate File 887. Welcome back to the committee in this capacity, Senator Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 887 is an initiative of the governors as part of the efforts to streamline state government. I do have an author's amendment, which I would move at this time. Mr. Chairman, it is the A1 amendment.
And that is in everybody's packet. Anyone care to comment on the A1 amendment? Do you care to describe it?
It's an author's amendment.
Author's amendment. Do you care to describe it or just move it?
Mr. Chairman, it is an author's amendment. So I've moved it. It can just be adopted, and then the bill is in the shape that I would like it to be considered.
All right. All in favor of the A1 amendment? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Senate File 887 is a proposal to consolidate the functions of the Department of Employee Relations into three other departments, or three other state agencies. One of them is the Department of Finance, and that is indeed where the bulk of the activities that are currently done by the Department of Employee Relations will be moved. So generally, the functions will be moved to the Department of Finance. The issues of workers' compensation will be moved to the Department of Administration, and health care purchasing will be moved to the Department of Health, the Commissioner of Health. There's also a provision in paragraph C under section 1 to transfer other duties of the Department of Employee Relations to other state agencies if they will more effectively accomplish the mission of this merger, and the governor is instructed or is given permission, discretion to make that kind of consultation. With the amendment that was added, there is a new Section 2 that provides worker protection. And with that amendment, we have indications that the those organizations that represent the workers, that is their workplace unions, either are in support of the bill or they are neutral on it and are taking no stand whatsoever. With me today is the Commissioner of Employee Relations, who's been on the job less than 6 weeks, and she's effectively come up with a proposal to do away with her job. And so it is my pleasure to have Commissioner of Employee Relations, Pat Anderson, to testify on behalf of this bill.
Welcome to the Committee Commissioner. Please state your name for the record. And
thank you. I'm Pat Anderson, the Commissioner of Employee Relations. Thank you.
And provide your testimony.
Thank you. I can take questions if you'd like. The amendment, I'll just note one other minor change. We changed the date from June 30th of 2008 to June 1, and that was done at the request of finance, mostly because they wanted to make sure they weren't bombarded at the end of their fiscal year. So it cuts another 30 days off the proposed time to finish the merger. Very minor change. I do want to note that with the worker protection amendment, we do support that also. It says no employee in classified services, not just those that are represented by the several employee unions, but those in classified service, period. Most of our staff is classified but unrepresented because they're protected employees because they have labor data and so on. But we thought it would be best to do a catch-all for all of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members?
Mr. Chairman, I would also indicate that on in part of the amendment that for changes that need to be made, statutory changes that need to be made after this additional consultation, that the reviser is asked to prepare a bill for the 2008 session that would bring those about in the 2008 session. But, Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I would move that.
Madam Chair? Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I just had a kind of a silly question is whose idea was this? I mean, why is this perceived to be a good idea?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, the governor has been interested in initiatives that would bring about streamlined and efficient government and looking for ways in which to accomplish that by aggregating functions, as a matter of fact, into that could be done more effectively in one agency than another. And it's my understanding that when the governor appointed Commissioner Anderson, he thought that the Department of Employee Relations was a good place to focus that kind of streamlining and asked her to come up with a plan to do that. It is also part of ongoing discussions among the governor and Representative Pawlowski and myself to look for other ways to do that in either changing structures or streamlining functions, and we'll be having continuing discussions on that.
Any other questions from the members?
Chair, may I make a comment too? I would like to just commend Senator Rust. Senator Betzold's also on this bill. This is a very good bipartisan piece of legislation. We all have the same purpose here. We're working together in a very speedy manner, and the unions are on board. Our staff is comfortable with the proposal, and I think this is a very good government reform. And we'll be very proud of it this session.
Okay, thank you. Would anybody in the audience care to comment either for or against this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move that
excuse me. I'm a worker. I work at please come up to the microphone and state your name for the record.
I'm here as a I really didn't realize this was going on, and I worked at a place for 42 years, and I had a very
please
bad...
Please state your name for the record.
James Bernard Ryland, R-E-I-L-A-N-D. Sorry about that.
It's fine.
Anyway, I worked at a place and had a very bad chemical injury, and I literally dropped to the floor. I vomited for hours. I bled from my nose for hours. I feel any changes, I would definitely like to be involved with this here. I literally got nothing out of it. They said attorneys told me sinus injuries, a chemical injury is worth nothing to them. They don't even want to handle it. So there I sit. I got a permanent injury since 1993. I'm still suffering with it. I literally got nothing out of it. I to me, I want to be involved with this thing. I just heard about it now, and I won't stand for anything that's getting pushed off the table. I guess I want to know who's totally involved with this, and I want to talk to them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 887 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance.
All right. Any members care to comment on the motion? Seeing no comment, all in favor of the motion to recommend to pass and move to Finance, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
The next bill on our agenda is Senate File 6, and Senator Pogomiller will be here momentarily. I will let people know that these proceedings, this hearing today is being televised. Senator Pogomiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before us now, Senate File 6, and which is a proposal for a constitutional amendment. The area of jurisdiction for this committee is in Section 5, where there is a proposal to establish a council to use the Heritage Enhancement Fund. On your behalf, although it's not an author's amendment, Senator Betzel moves the amendment. Is that correct, Senator Betzel?
I'm moving the 83 amendment. This is not the first stop of the bill, so it'll have to be
right.
Described.
So, Senator Pogomiller, with regard to Senate File 6, we now have the A3 amendment before us. Do you have a copy of that amendment, sir?
I do.
If you would care to explain it, we'll take it up before. If you can talk about the whole bill, just to give us some background. Most of us are familiar with it, but then explain the amendment itself in detail. We would appreciate that.
Madam Chair, this is the legacy bill that Senator Sams carried last year. It is substantially the same as it passed the full Senate. It's a 3/8 constitutional amendment with the voters deciding whether to raise the additional money and for what purposes. The way this bill is being talked about, and the Finance Committee has not yet dealt with all the funding aspects of it, but the way I've been describing it to people is that basically it's $100 million for clean water, $100 million for conservation, forests, and hunting and fishing, and $100 million for cultural and cultural education. Included in that is parks, et cetera. But that's basically a three-legged stool. Legacy expenditures for those three legs. What is different from the Sams bill that we adopted that was passed last year is language on doing with forestry on page, and maybe Consul could point that out real quick. Where's that forestry language?
Madam Chair, Senator Pogomiller, it's on
Actually, it's Mr. Knopf, no. It's on page 4, line 15.
Senator Pogue-Miller, do you see that?
That's the reference to forestry.
Mr. Knopf?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's the new paragraph, or Madam Chairman, excuse me. It's the reference to the new paragraph B, a forest legacy and forest consolidation account is created. I don't know.
It's in the first engrossment, Senator Pogue-Miller.
I don't have the engrossment. My apology.
Madam Chair and
so
Senator Pogue-Miller, if you look also on the amendment, which deletes
okay,
that
there
whole
it is,
section.
Yes, it's obviously there now. That's why I couldn't find it. I didn't have the engrossment. Yes, so that's new from, that was added by the Natural Resource Environment Committee, Senator Chaudhry's committee.
So, Senator Pogue-Miller, what you, some of the language in the Betzold A3 amendment was previously in the bill. You're just changing parts of it, and you just deleted the whole section and putting in a new section, but some of the language is the same.
Madam Chair, what I was trying to reference is the overall bill, and it's basically the SAMS bill, except for this new forestry language, and with the caveat that the actual dollars and what's included in the dollars has not yet been discussed at the Finance Committee level. I suspect there will be some changes. That's why I described this basically as kind of a three-legged stool with those three big pieces. As to whether the film board is in or not, my guess is it won't be when things are done, but that's a Finance Committee discussion.
Yes.
With regard, so that's what the bill is, basically the SAMS bill, except for that forestry. And what the A3 is a new revised version of the Heritage Council that Senator Chaudhry and his committee had talked about. And it is, I think it's...
Can you explain what the differences are
yes.
the first engrossment to the new amendment?
In the previous bill, it was, I believe, a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13-member committee, it looks like. And this now makes it a 16-member.
11.
11, 2, now it's 4, going to 6. Okay, it was 11 under the SAMS approach. This would make it a 16-member, 10 citizens, so it's still citizen-dominated, 6 legislators. And so there's one more legislator from each house. I think Senator Chaudhry and members of his committee thought it made more sense because then you could have 2 majority, 1 minority type thing, so 3 rather than 2. And then, but it maintains the dominance by the citizen members. And so that's 10 members. And the exact duties of the council, I think, are substantially the same as in the SAMS bill. There's some language to clarify, as Senator Rest had requested, that we clarify how the first meeting takes place. And that's on page 2.4 of the amendment. The meeting would be convened by the chair of the Legislative Courting Commission, but then these 16 members would elect their own chair, vice chair, secretary, et cetera. And some of these minor technical changes were based on, you've got a memo before your committee.
Guidelines
for what commission should look like.
Right. And so forth. Yeah.
And one of them was, you should say how the first meeting gets called. And so that's what this did. The governor's appointments to the council are subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. I am unclear as to whether that was in the SAMS version, but that fits pretty much what the guidelines for councils are. I think this language on 2.15 and 2.18 is new. The council, in consultation with statewide local fishing, hunting, forestry, wildlife groups, shall develop a biennial budget. This in consultation language, I think, was a direct suggestion by Senator Chaudhry. Approval of biennial budget for the Heritage Enhancement Fund requires a firm vote of at least 11 members of the council, so that's kind of a super majority. 11 out of 16,
two-thirds.
Two-thirds, or I don't know the exact number there, but it's a super majority at least, 11 out of 16. I don't know if that's the exact number it should be, or 10 out of 16, or 12 out of 16. The reason you can have 16 rather than an odd number is because it is super majorities and stuff. It's not, you won't have tie votes, and so it's not like the Senate Tax Committee of last year. Anybody have the opportunity to sit on that? Just me, I guess.
It is two-thirds.
Is it two-thirds?
Yes, it is.
So normally you like odd number of committees, but in this instance, since it's a supermajority, 16 is fine. And it's really kind of a group that's meant to be more collaborative in nature. It's not meant to be voting by majority, really. Like in the bill last year that we passed, a governor should submit a separate budget detail. Talks about administration, open meetings. So I think the rest is pretty much boilerplate from last year's bill with those minor tweaks. And this has, just so full disclosure, the details of this were discussed with Senator Chaudhry, Senator Anderson, the various committees and people who are particularly interested in this because at one point they authored a bill this year. Senator Rest participated in that informal discussion. Senator Cohen, I guess, because he's on the full finance committee. And I believe that there's at least among those group of members who are authoring bills, there's a general consensus that this fits the jurisdiction of this committee in terms of something that people would be comfortable with. Obviously, it's up to the committee.
Senator Pogemiller, I do continue to have one concern, and that is the budget-making process of this council. They are, in Subdivision 4 on page 2, they are permitted to employ personnel, et cetera, and contract with consultants, get legal opinions, data from agencies, et cetera. And the expenses of the council are paid for themselves from the Heritage Enhancement Fund. And I wonder at what point the council's budget has legislative oversight. And since that one of the duties of this council is to, within their budget, to include at least $5 million to give out in grants to local sporting and conservation clubs, even though it requires the vote of 11 members of the council, which would mean all the public members and one legislator could approve the budget. I'm a little bit concerned that there's no, as far as I can see, there is not a requirement to pass muster before a legislative committee. And I wonder if you share that concern and if there would be a way of fixing that. And I just, in reviewing it in the past couple of hours of the amendment, came up with that concern.
I think that's an excellent point. It seems that we should have some
embedded in here that I don't see now. Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair and Senator Pogemiller, the way this works is all of this money would have to be appropriated by law. It says that they're going to use that money for that purpose, but they can't use it unless it's appropriated by law. The constitutional provision states that all the money has to be appropriated by law, so that as part of the appropriation process, money for those purposes would have to be appropriated by the legislature. This group will make recommendations to the legislature, and then those recommendations would have to be then enacted into law, similar to what the process we use right now for the LCCMR.
So, Senator Pogemiller, Mr. Knopf, is it any comfort language to me to add, like on line 236, that the administrative expenses of the council shall be paid from the Heritage Enhancement Fund according to the law? Or so that people
are... As appropriated by the legislature?
Or as appropriated by the legislature?
Yep. Madam Chair, I think the better term would be as appropriated by law.
As appropriated by law, Senator Pogemiller, are you amenable to that?
Yes, that's clarifying. I mean, that's in essence what happens, but I think that's good
Senator,
language.
Senator Betzel, would you be willing to incorporate that language in your amendment?
Yes.
Is there any discussion on adding after line on line 236 after the word fund or before the period, insert a comma, as appropriated by law. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair,
Senator Pogue,
if I could ask, I've not served on the LCMR. Senator Bickerman chairs it, I think. What kind of staffing levels are there for that? Just for the record, to kind of give people a sense of what's being talked about here.
Senator Bickerman, what? How many FTEs are there,
Mr.
on the
Madam Chair, I
LCMR?
Four full-time.
Oh, really?
They
only
spend
$30 billion.
The Committee on Finance should be very interested in your bill, for not only for the substance of it, but for how it is administered, this particular part of it. And this, Senator Pogemill, this is only part a council set up to make recommendations on part of the
About a third of the money.
On part of the dollars. Just for the sake of the members, would you indicate who will be have authority, given that would be the legislature, but through which agencies would the dollars in the other funds be seen?
Well, cultural stuff pretty much goes through.
And is it in the bill or not in the bill?
No, not in the bill.
Bill.
Clean water pretty much through what we know as the Anderson Budget Division. Now, cultural stuff.
So it's not specified in your bill except for this one.
Correct.
This is the only place it's carved out.
Yes, and that's,
I think that members need to know that.
As I understand the history of this piece of legislation, that is something that folks in the stakeholders in the hunting, fishing, and conservation area feel very, very strongly about a citizens' council. And so that's why that is here, because of the feeling in that area of expenditure that's a tradition that is felt pretty strongly about. And this is citizen-dominated, this particular commission.
Is there any discussion on A3 amendment? Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, before we go further, the reason I believe we have, I'm going to ask Mr. Knopf, is it four or five now? And the reason we had more than that, but when we put the citizens group in there, then it changed. So I believe am I correct, four or is it five? I know for three for sure.
Yep. Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Knopf.
It's four. There are four staff people for the LCMR, the executive director, two professional staff that work with the director, and then one secretary for the commission.
Well, Madam Chair, I wanted to be sure that was
Senator
clear,
Vickerman.
So I didn't guess. So.
No, Madam Chair, that is joint House and Senate. So you can't compare it just to a Senate committee.
Just a big spender, Senator.
I've just never been on it myself. I gave up aspiring to be on it, 20 years ago in my career?
Shared that same lack of aspiration about the same
time. After you figured out how the place worked. Just like me, I figured out I'm never going to get on that commission.
Is there further discussion on the A3 amendment? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am trying to understand the provision that was added on 213 about the governor's appointments needing to be confirmed by the Senate. And I guess I'm looking back on the first page where the Speaker of the House gets to appoint six members, and the subcommittee on committees in the Senate, which I think has four or five members on it, gets to appoint six members, and the governor's going to appoint four members, but then we're going to ask that those members be confirmed by the full Senate, and none of the other members are confirmed by the full Senate. And I just think it seems kind of contradictory. Either we don't require that of the governor's appointments, or we require it of the appointments made by the speaker and the subcommittee on committees as well. So I'm just trying to understand how that happens. And then when the speaker, for example, or the committee, the subcommittee on committees does appointments, what kind of an application process do they go through? I know the governor's office has a fairly extensive application process and even screening process in many cases before appointments are made.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogomiller.
As I understand it, this is fairly boilerplate, and I am not aware.
Senator Pogomiller, the LCCMR is the model for this particular provision, and the members that are appointed by the governor on the LCCMR, the public members, are part of the open appointments process, and they are subject to advice and consent, and the public members appointed by the legislature or not.
I think, and the reason I think it would be a little, we could certainly do it, but I doubt that the House would agree to have the speaker's appointments okayed by the Senate. Would be my guess.
Senator Roebling?
Well, Madam Chair, I would move to strike H because I just don't see the consistency there, except you refer back to the LLCMR. The other thing that's troubling me is that we have two-year terms here. And so I'm thinking that with the practice that is in the Senate right now, whenever anyone is reappointed by the governor, they have to come back to us for confirmation. So we're looking at every 2 years, just the governor's appointments coming back to us, and they may be reappointments, but that's been the practice this year in the Senate. And so I'm thinking that this may not be necessary.
Senator Pogomiller?
Well, obviously, sitting here in the state Senate, a lot of us think it is a good idea to have the Senate confirm, regardless of who the governor is. The four-year issue, the two-year issue is a different one. Suppose you could have the governor's appointments be for 4 years. That makes some sense. I think that makes some sense, because why would a governor have to go through it every 2 years if they've made their appointment? Having him do it in a second term is a different matter, I think. But in a first term, why should you have to do it twice in the same term? So I think a four-year term for governor's appointments makes a lot of sense. Four-year term for public members of the House and the Senate might even make sense, because that's, that's two budget cycles. So I guess... LCMR is, the public members are 2 years, huh?
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, Senator Pogomiller, my recollection, I think it's 3 years. I think they've got a little different.
I'd be inclined to have four-year terms for the governors and maybe all the public members, four-year terms. House and Senate members are, it seems to me the House and the Senate can put them on or take them off as they please. But maybe the... Would that be a compromise, just have four-year terms for the public members?
Oh, Madam Chair, that would...
Senator Roebling.
That would be better than having them come back again every 2 years, when I expect that the governor, once he appoints them, whoever is in office, would probably want them to serve during his term. And that would help, although I still question whether or not they need confirmation when the other members do not.
Madam Chair,
Senator Pogomiller,
Senator Roebling, I would accept four-year terms for the public members. That gives them two cycles, a little more expertise. That makes some sense. I would like to keep Senate confirmation, would be my instinct.
Senator Pogomiller, if the gubernatorial appointees would serve for 4 years, at this point, wouldn't it be that you'd want them to serve a term that would end with the be coterminous with the governor's term?
So.
It could be 4 years if they were appointed in January of the year and a new governor would be elected, which would be in 2010. Although you do sunset the council in July in July 30th of 2013. I guess anticipating that the council would be extended beyond that in some future legislation. I think we need to deal with the issue of confirmation first, which is Senator Roebling's amendment, and then, having acted on that, look to perhaps an extension of terms for the public members. I would ask Mr. Knopf to be working on an amendment to that effect, regardless of whether Senator Roebling's amendment passes. Is the intention clear? Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just...
Senator Pogamiller.
So I presume the motion would be to delete 213, 214.
Or letter H.
Right. I'd prefer to leave it in. And Senator Roebling, consider that I think it actually increases kind of the credibility of the group if there's Senate confirmation. And I think that actually strengthens the group. So I'd just make that argument. By and large, gubernatorial appointments are confirmed. Every so often they aren't, but by and large they are.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I have more of an understanding of how the governor's appointments are made because he has the open appointment process than I do of the speaker's appointments or the subcommittee on committees. I don't understand how they find their members and how they choose to appoint. And so I know how the governor's been doing it, and that has been a tradition through all governors, not just the current occupant, but... I just think that that's more open than the other one, and so I feel less of a need for the Senate to review that than even the other positions.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I think that might be for your lack of either having served on the committee on committees, or they. I think they often ask for suggestions from the public and stuff. And then this committee sits there and it's bipartisan, or... I forget how many members are on it right now. I certainly wouldn't say it's not more open. At least in the Senate, you could argue the Senate process is more open than both the others because one person gets to decide on the others, the Speaker or the Governor, whereas in the Senate, it's done by a committee, not one person. So at least the Senate, it's not a single person making the decision.
I have a question for Mr. Knopf, and before we act on your motion, on lines 127 and 128, line number 5 of the membership, it does say that these four public members will be appointed by the governor. Do you have to state that the governor needs to follow his open appointments process, or is that assumed by this language? Do we need a statutory reference?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I don't know that it's assumed. I don't know enough about the governor's open appointment process.
I think that's 15059. Do you have the statute?
Madam Chair, Mr. Watson sitting over here is looking at that. And according to Mr. Watson, it applies unless you otherwise spell out that it doesn't apply.
Okay. So we assume the open appointments process here without a statutory reference. Is there other discussion of Senator Roebling's amendment to delete H of subdivision 2?
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I've been here quite a few years. I've always always asked the author if he's accepted an amendment like that or not, because I know you have to get this through another committee, and hopefully on the floor. So I'm caught between my friend Senator Roebling and you. I want this bill to move forward. And do you think this amendment, if it went on, would jeopardize anything we're doing? That's what I need, you know.
Okay. No, I think that's totally in the jurisdiction of this committee. I would hope a Senate committee would be for Senate confirmations, but who knows?
I think Senator Pogamiller has expressed his opposition to the Roebling amendment. Is there further discussion? Senator Betzel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As I was thinking through it, I thought, well, if you've got this organization that the governor has some appointees, the Senate and the House, the Senate makes its appointees and then basically has, I guess, kind of a leg up because we also have a say in the gubernatorial appointees where the House does not. But I'm inclined, frankly, to leave it in for right now because, frankly, if the House is willing to let us, you know, have the say over it, why not? If they say, no, wait a minute, we want this to be an equal process where, you know, the House makes its appointments, the Senate makes its appointments, and the governor makes its appointments. The House knows what to do when it gets to, if it has to go to a conference committee. So, as I say, I'm inclined to leave it in right now and kind of see just where the other body weighs in.
Is there further discussion on the Roebling Amendment to delete H of Subdivision 2? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The noes have it, and the motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Mr. Knopf, do you have language that would speak to the issue of longer terms for the public members?
Madam Chair, there's a couple of ways you can do it. What you mentioned earlier, we're making it kind of coterminous with the appointing authority. I mean, one way to do it is to say public membership terms are coterminous with the appointing authority, and legislative membership terms are 2 years, or you could say legislative memberships are serve at the pleasure of the appointing authority or something to that effect.
Senator Pogamiller, do you have a preference?
I think
on how
coterminous with the appointing authority, but in the sense in legislative members at the will of the appointing authority.
And serving on the council until their successors are
correct
appointed. Mr. Knopf, could you read the language of then F of Subdivision 2 that would accomplish that?
Madam Chair, members, the way that I'm suggesting amending it is F is before membership on 2.8, insert public membership terms are coterminous with the appointing authority and legislative, and then delete 2 years and insert at the pleasure of the appointing authority.
So would you read that to us, please?
It would read, public membership terms are coterminous with the appointing authority, and legislative membership terms are at the pleasure of the appointing authority, comma, except that members shall serve on the council until their successors are appointed.
Madam Chair, that's very eloquent because that then says the House members. That's very eloquent.
Without having to mention 2 years.
Right.
Senator Larson moves the amendment as suggested by Senate counsel. Is there a discussion of that amendment? Does everyone understand what the language is without having it in writing before them? Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. I'm curious. Except that members shall serve on the council until their successors are appointed would seem to allow the governor or somebody to circumvent the reappointment process at the end of 4 years. Or is this and just
Senator Lurie, this is a that particular phrase allows for the council to continue operating while it waits for the new appointments. We've had legislative commissions that are in limbo because of the late appointment of their members, and some of them have now taken to adding language to the statute that controls them to say the current members, if they're reelected, continue to serve until the new members are appointed, and Senator Pogamiller has taken that language to put here so that there's consistency and continuity in the operation of the council.
That makes some sense, but does it allow for, is there somewhere where an appointment that we're looking for is required so that a member couldn't just carry on?
Senator Lurie, the amendment indicates that appointment on page 1, line 32, that appointments to the council should be made by February 1st, 2009, and then following that would be people would serve until their successors are appointed. but their terms are also stated, so the appointing authority knows that they need to make new appointments.
Okay, so they know that they need to. Are they?
Senator Lurie, there hasn't been any way that we can force those appointments to happen. But once the initial appointments are made, it is an incentive to the appointing authority if they want to change the appointments to do so, because otherwise the people who were appointed before continue to serve.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the Larson Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Larson Amendment as read to us by Senate Counsel, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. Senator Roebling.
One more quick question. As I was looking this over, it doesn't indicate that we need to have any geographic representation. And I can understand sometimes the problem with that when we're looking for people who have a special knowledge or skill in an area. But I can also hear, after all of the different appointments are made from the House and the Senate and the governor, that one area may have most of the representation and other areas may have little or none. And I don't know if that's been considered or not.
Senator Pogamiller, that could be remedied on page 1, line 32, under C. Mr. Knopf, something like appointing authority shall consult with, which is already in the language, hunting, fishing, and wildlife groups.
And consider
reflecting geographic diversity.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I was helping the person who was doing the committee report with the earlier amendment. I didn't catch everything. That could be just restated.
Mr. Knopf, Senator Roebling is suggesting that one of the considerations of the appointing authorities is not only that they, all of them, consult with the hunting, fishing, and wildlife groups, but that they also consider geographic representation as well from the whole state. And I thought that maybe a phrase could be added on line 32 after wildlife groups.
And consider geographic balance?
Madam Chair, the only problem with that is that you're going to have three different appointing authorities that are going to be that aren't necessarily going to know what each one is going to be doing at the time. So it's going to be, I mean, they could within each of their three or four appointments, they could consider the balance, but it would have to be only within that group that they're appointing and not necessarily for the entire group.
That'd be fine.
Well, even at that, though, the language would be general enough that they don't have to do it intergroup. They can just do it intragroup by just saying appointing authorities shall consult with hunting, fishing, and wildlife groups. And as Senator Pogamiller said, and consider, it's not a very elegant phrase, but consider geographic balance. Is there a better way? Senator Betzel, what would you suggest?
Sure.
Sounds fine.
I think Senator Roebling thinks it's okay.
I'm sure. I would move that. Maybe it can get cleaned up a little later.
No, we don't do that, remember, in this committee. We vote on language. We don't vote on ideas. We need the language, Mr. Knopf.
Well, Madam Chair, I think what you and Senator Pogamiller had suggested, just before the period on line 1.32, insert and consider geographic balance. Because basically it all hinges on making appointments to the council.
Okay.
They shall consult with those groups and consider geographic balance. So so it would read it. Basically, if you take out the hunting, fishing, wildlife groups, part of it would be in making appointments to the council. They shall consult and consider geographic balance. I think that works.
Senator Roebling,
shall consider. I think and shall consider.
And shall consider.
Shall consider geographic balance.
Senator Roebling, would it be your intention then to move that amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So after the before the period on line 1.32 to insert and shall consider geographic balance. Does everyone understand that amendment? Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion prevails, and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion of the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller.
I don't know if there's any of the stakeholders that want to testify on this amendment or not.
I'm going to ask for that in just a moment. Is there anyone, is there any further discussion among the members? Is there anyone in the public that wants to comment on the A3 amendment? That is the only thing that's really the jurisdiction of this committee. Seeing none, we have the A3 amendment as amended before us. All those in favor of the A3 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 6 before us. Senator Betzel?
Madam Chair, if there's nobody else here on it, I would believe the next step is Finance.
Correct.
I move that Senate File 6, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Pogamiller has legislators on it. We, when something goes to the Committee on Finance, it goes to the floor. So Senator Cohen has told us, so the proper motion is for it to go to Rules.
I went to Rules after Finance.
Rules first?
That's the way Senator Cohen has indicated to us. He doesn't want to send a bill from Finance to Rules. When it goes to Finance, it then goes, I guess, either to Taxes or to the floor, not to the Rules Committee.
Well, in this instance, though, Senator Cohen is kind of stuck because this is a constitutional amendment. Senator Cohen will have to refer it to Rules Committee. It's a constitutional amendment. So I think you're saying it should go to Rules first and then send back to Rules.
Madam Chair. I think that's a good point. In this instance, why don't we send it to Finance first? Because it will eventually go to Rules. Bills that have had task force that have legislators on them, we've sent them to Rules first before they either go to Taxes or to Finance because of Senator Cohen's policy that anything that comes to Finance is not going to go to Rules after that.
Madam Chair, apparently it has to go to the Finance or Tax Committee as well, too. So I don't know, Senator Pogamiller, is there a preference whether it should go to Tax or
Finance?
Finance, okay.
Okay, I think we accept your motion. Senator Betzel moves that Senate File Number 6, that's amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there further discussion of that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is passed. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee. Thank you very much.
If it gets pulled out, you don't need to see it. I thought you were saying it doesn't matter. It still has to go because he's in
trouble.
Got it.
Membership.
Oh, law center.
Strike 2 years.
Yep, strike 2 years. And then
that's all right. Yeah, that's fine. Budget
in the Constitution.
Too bad. I agree.
Moving that ventilation amendment here.
The next bill we have in front of us is Senate File 238. Senator Sharon. Senator Sharon, although I had indicated to you a little bit earlier one process, we're going to change that slightly. I am going to ask you to give a brief description of your bill, and then we are going to take the half an hour of testimony, and then we will move to amendments and then discussion among the the members. So if you would care to explain the, I don't know which engrossment it is, I think that's the second engrossment of Senate file
238, yes.
You may do that briefly, and then we will hear 15 minutes of testimony in support of your position on the bill and 15 minutes of testimony on the issues in the bill that, and we hope that your testifiers also will speak only to the issues in the bill that bring the bill to this committee. That is the preemption amendment that was added and the amendment that established a an exception based on installation of a ventilation system. So, Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much, Chair Rest. This is Senate File 238, the second engrossment. It is a bill that establishes additional limits on where smoking can occur and exposure to secondhand smoke. So I think most simply stated, it is a bill that increases the definition of where smoking is prohibited. And it includes the workplaces, enclosed workplaces, bars, and restaurants, except under certain conditions in this new engrossment. This is a bill that is directed towards reducing the health risk for the public to secondhand smoke. It speaks specifically to indoor spaces where others are impacted. There are a list of permitted smoking uses, and I would just draw people's attention to that, smoking would be permitted in scientific studies. It would be permitted in traditional Native American ceremonies. It would be permitted in private places, so persons who are in their own cars or in their own homes or in places where they are not exposing others to secondhand smoke are not prohibited, obviously, from smoking. Tobacco products that are sold in tobacco shops can be tested in tobacco shops. And in this engrossment, bars are allowed to have smoking under certain conditions of ventilation, and there is a gradual time frame in which those bars have to come in compliance. There's also in this engrossment some new additions from the original bill, which preempts local government from doing anything that is more restrictive, and also asks for a charitable impact study and allocation of funds for dislocated workers. What might be of interest to the committee is what the repealer is in relationship to the repealer that's referred to in the last page of the engrossment is related to 144.415, in which the earlier regulation allowed certain areas to be designated as long as certain ventilation or physical barriers were in place. And it also designated a bar as the only establishment that could have smoking in its entirety without separation. That's the language that's being repealed by this engrossment. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. We're now pleased to have the testimony in support of your position in the bill. Call forward those folks. I have 10 after 4.
Is it here?
People testifying that you bring forward have until 4:25, at which time I will stop them.
Thank you very much.
And we will do this without interruption from the members. Or if someone persists, we will lengthen the time. But we hope that they will let you have your testifiers testify to this bill. Before we begin,
thank you, Senator, Madam Chair. I just have a question, and maybe I missed this if you said that. Since if we're examining this bill now here, this is the third committee, are we limiting our activities to a particular section, the local government section, or is the bill wide open, or have you talked about that, and will the testimony be to the particular section?
Senator Gerlach, I had asked Senator Sharon to and others that wish to testify on the bill to limit their testimony to the issues that brought the bill to this committee, which was the statewide preemption and the ventilation issue. And, you know, members are free to talk about whatever they want to, but I asked for the public testimony to be to those two issues and, in addition, invited anyone that wished to give a written testimony on these issues or other issues to do so, and we have received a number of those.
Right. Thank you.
So now we're at about 12 after, so we'll go to 27 after. Please, you're welcome
okay.
to identify yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Mark Frost. I'm the representative of Ward 3, Mankato City Council. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to come up here and address you people today as a local official that comes from a smoke-free community. I'm also the council member that wrote the smoke-free ordinance in Mankato. specifically, I'd like to talk to you about local government authority and the preemptive language in the current bill. From our experience in Mankato, and I bring a fairly unique perspective to this because I initially voted against a ordinance that was brought before the Mankato City Council in 2004. I felt the economic impacts would be too bad on the city of Mankato. I went home, did my homework. I can't get away from this issue because I'm a pharmacist every day of the week. And I see the hundreds of millions of dollars that the taxpayers of the state pay for the health-related consequences of smoking. And I couldn't get away from it. I went out and called the city managers of Duluth, Rochester, Louisville, Kentucky, the center of gravity in the United States of tobacco, is smoke-free. And as ridiculous as that sounds, I couldn't believe it myself. But the biggest question I had for these guys is, what is your normal business evolution change to since you went smoke-free? And consistently, the answer was, it hasn't changed one bit. We have bars coming in that want to be in our city, that want to invest, work hard, pay taxes, and we have some that go out. The Duluth city manager did say he thought that possibly one bar in Duluth had gone out because of the smoking, okay? And he said that was possible. He said he didn't know that for a fact. But overall, the evolution of business in those communities did not change one bit. I rewrote the ordinance so that it had a number of amendments in it that I had tried to get passed in the original one where I would have supported it. Rewrote it. We considered it in, I believe, September of 2005. It passed 6-1. It has gone through tons of public testimony. We've done a lot of work on this thing. We've tried to make sure that every stakeholder group was heard from. And the facts are that in Mankato, if I would have known what I know now, I probably would have voted for it originally. It's had no effect on our business, despite the fact that we've had 15 bars get exemptions. The exemption thing was brought in by me. It was written with absolutely no caveats in it whatsoever. At the same time that our smoke-free ordinance went into effect in July 1st, 2006, you guys had just passed the .08 law up here that had gone into effect earlier that year. Nobody asked them to prove that it was a smoking ordinance that had made their business go down. Consistently from the bar owners in Mankato, I've heard that was the overall biggest problem that they had was the .08. People started paying attention to the fact that they can't drink all night and hop in a car. That made a big difference. Anyhow, as far as a preemptive language goes, it would override what the citizens of Mankato what we did in our last city council when we passed this thing was we put it on a referendum to see how the citizens of Mankato felt about this, whether we're on the right path or not. There was a very spirited debate between the bar restaurant owners and the people on the other side of the issue. They all had access to media. They all took advantage of that access. And the fact of the matter is, when it came out, 69% of the people in Mankato voted to keep this ordinance in place. Originally, this thing had a preemption clause in it that if the state did anything, it would be preempted by anything the state did. That's gone now because the citizens of Mankato do not want that. They want this ordinance in place well into the future. And that's why we're talking about preemption here today. I am in St. Paul today representing the overwhelming majority of the citizens of Mankato. Residents who do not want our community's secondhand smoke protections rolled back by passing a preemptive law that will basically silence their votes. In closing, I'd like to recognize the other local officials that have come to show their support for preserving the rights of local governments to meet their community's needs. Those are Bruce Sanders from Coon Rapids, Bruce, Gail Dorfman from Hennepin County, Gail here, Amy Wild from Meeker County,
County Commissioner.
Steve Elkins from Bloomington, Steve, Judy Oley from Olmsted County, Paul Wilson from Olmsted County, Ken Brown from Olmsted County, thank you, Ken, Linda Loomis from Golden Valley. Dave Thune was sitting next to me and had to leave he didn't explain his reasons, but he's gone. Mike Podolke from Olmsted County. Mike, right there. Bob Schaefer from Golden Valley. Steve Peterson from Bloomington. Jim McDonough from Ramsey County. Karen Nordstrom from Bloomington. Gary Schiff from Minneapolis. And Linda Koblick from Hennepin County, and Jim Swenson from Meeker County. We're all here to support the fact that we need to have the preemption language taken out of the Senate bill. And also, in our experience in Mankato, as far as the ventilation goes, we had a brand new restaurant put into Mankato prior to the ordinance going into effect. The argument there, again, was we have up-to-date ventilation systems. I'm sorry, folks, but when we went to eat in that restaurant, I'm sure Kathy's been there before, too. It's Pub 500 in Mankato. You could still sit on the other side of the restaurant, have to go home, take a bath, and throw your clothes away. So just so you're aware of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Frost. Senator Sharon?
The next testifier will be Brian Hoffman from the City of St. Louis Park Inspections.
Mr. Hoffman, welcome to the committee. If you will identify yourself, please, for the record.
Certainly, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Hoffman. I work as the Director of Inspections for the City of St. Louis Park, responsible for both the Health Department and Building Department. And today I'm here to offer a little clarification on nicotine testing and ventilation. About 3 years ago, the city embarked upon an education effort regarding bars and restaurants that allowed smoking to let the public know that even though they were going in to go sit in a non-smoking section, they may very well be exposed to secondhand smoke compounds. So in order to do this, the city felt justified and responsible to basically say, yeah, we proved to some degree that that was happening, rather than just put a sign up on a restaurant door and hand out education information. So we took a look at saying, how can we verify secondhand smoke exists? So we studied for several months and basically said, you know what, nicotine is a compound that's very unique. It doesn't exist there for any reason except the burning of tobacco. And it is measurable. It's something that can be collected. Very well realizing that nicotine wasn't the principal concern, but it was just a marker element in secondhand smoke. A lot of other compounds could be produced by the byproducts of cooking, burning meat on a grill or things like that. So nicotine was unique in that way. We knew this would be ambitious, primarily because the only labs to do nicotine sampling were in Chicago, Illinois, and Vancouver, British Columbia. And the cost to run a sample through was well over $100 to $150. And we had a degradation problem. Once we collected samples, it would take it would have to be shipped in temperature-controlled containers to get accurate readings. So what the city did, partnering with the City of Bloomington in a laboratory effort that we use for other types of testing, we basically bought equipment, set up a lab to be able to measure these nicotine test tubes. So we went out, we had our health staff go out and measure to take samples several times in each restaurant. Has to be at least two samples simultaneously to have any degree of accuracy. Go out in the evenings and on the weekends. Very time-consuming for the city staff, as it turned out. The results basically was, yes, we found nicotine in the non-smoking areas of restaurants. However, we weren't sure and really never felt comfortable that it could be used accurately enough for regulatory purposes. It was just simply to indicate the presence of secondhand smoke. Every building has a ventilation system. They all have HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. A lot of the buildings we tested may have had air filtration. Nicotine could be filtered, but not necessarily all the other compounds of secondhand smoke. The city basically did this for about 9 months. The cost to the restaurant owners, because we charged back, the cost was about $700 per restaurant to do a series of three samples. And so it was very expensive, and it was very time-consuming on behalf of the city, and we never felt as though we could verify the accuracy for any regulatory, but just as an informational purpose. Thank you.
We have a handout that I will have distributed to you from St. Louis Park. Somebody could come and receive this. There's also packets of information that have a more thorough discussion and description of issues around the subjects that are in front of the committee today. I'm hoping that you've received those packets and will review those. And I'd like to introduce Rich Peter, who's the Associate Director of Public Health in Olmsted County.
Peter, welcome to the committee. If you'll identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rich Peter. I'm Associate Director of Public Health at Olmsted County. Our address is 2100 Campus Drive Southeast, Rochester, Minnesota. I'm making my comments today on behalf of our county's Community Health Board, our County Board of Commissioners, the Minnesota Local Public Health Association, and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Earlier, you met four of the commissioners from our county and been introduced to them. I'm addressing today two of the amendments that were added to the bill last week, the ventilation and nicotine amendments, and then the preemption of local authority. Among the recent amendments to this bill is this inclusion to the reference to nicotine, and the reference to nicotine simply diverts people's attention from the real risks of tobacco smoke. Nicotine is a compound in tobacco that induces smokers to become addicted to tobacco and is not appropriate for this bill. It is a red herring. My comments about ventilation today are based on nationally respected sources, the U.S. Surgeon General's Office, the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, known as ASHRAE, and James Repace, who is a national researcher and tobacco smoke expert, who is also an associate member of ASHRAE. These authorities find that environmental tobacco smoke is a complex mixture. Burning cigarettes, pipes, and cigars emit tiny particles into the air, and many of these are known carcinogens. They are less than 2.5 microns in size, and in air pollution literature are referred to as PM2.5. These are particularly dangerous for public health. Because of their tiny size, they're drawn directly into the deepest recesses of our lungs, and they're into the circulatory system where they promote inflammation and arterial wall damage. They induce heart disease, strokes, respiratory disease, and cancer. These authorities are experienced and considered decades of international efforts to reduce environmental tobacco smoke exposure, including separation of smokers from non-smokers, ventilation, air cleaning and filtration, and smoke-free policy. They consistently concluded that ventilation technology cannot possibly achieve acceptable indoor air quality in the presence of smoking, and they find smoke-free workplaces are the only appropriate protection for workers and the public indoors. All I can say about the issue of the nicotine and ventilation amendments is that diverting government resources to HVAC systems and nicotine that does not appropriately address the tobacco smoke health risk is expensive and a waste of public and business resources. The public is more apt to respect legislative policy that is based on credible and objective evidence than and science than on the ad hoc smoke and gerbil gimmicks that I understand were presented as part of the support for the ventilation and nicotine amendment in last week's committee hearing. This bill does not need to be complex and misleading. This legislative body can confidently follow the advice of the U.S. Surgeon General's Office and ASHRAE. Their advice is to adopt policy that assures smoke-free conditions for indoor and work in public places. In closing, I just want to say that provisions in state law that do not provide comprehensive protection and preempts the local government protection undermines years of local experience, the thoughtful work and protection that communities expect from government. The Freedom to Breathe Act needs to be the foundation and the floor supporting and reinforcing local elected officials in their statutory responsibility to address health risks in their communities. It needs to avoid the preemption ceiling. In this situation, preemption is disrespectful of local elected officials and their hard work and decisions. Such ceilings handicap local officials' statutorily assigned responsibilities to address health risks in their communities, and it removes protections from their communities that are already supported and respected. Bottom line, remove the ill-advised, misleading, and wasteful ventilation, nicotine, and preemption amendments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Senator Sharon, you came in about 20 seconds under. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. The next three testifiers are also testifying on these two issues, but from a different perspective. I will call them in the order in which they are listed on the agenda. Mr. Charles Sinclair. Once you are seated, sir, I have 28 after, so we'll go to 43.
All right. Madam Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I wanted to speak.
I need you to identify yourself.
Charles St. Clair, and I am represent the Minnesota Tavern League. I also own a restaurant and bar called Fabulous Ferns at 400 Selby Avenue, St. Paul. My main purpose here today was to speak to preemption. But any questions you'd have about ventilation, I think I could also respond to those. I have an owner restaurant that we built that opened in 1991, Fabulous Ferns. We've spent 16 years working the restaurant. It was built in probably the worst neighborhood in St. Paul and has been noted as being responsible for the Selby Avenue Renaissance in St. Paul, which has been probably the number one urban renewal project in the city to date. Before any government direction, we at Fabulous Ferns spent $13,000 to bring in air filtration equipment into our bar area. This was about 4 years ago. We spent the $13,000, got tremendous response from our customers. People loved it. Our bar business went up about 3%. We thought, well, that was, you know, a great return on our investment. We had, at that point, increased our business over 15 years from 3 to 5% every year. Shortly after that time, at that point, Ramsey County enacted their smoke-free legislation, and we responded to that by, very similar to the Olmsted County Act, with a ventilation component to it. We went to the bank, borrowed $53,000 from the bank, of which we are still paying that money off, separated our bar area from the restaurant, created a negative airspace, vented, again, got tremendous response from our crowd. People would talk about the pristine air in Ferns. We tested the air in Ferns on a Friday afternoon at cocktail hour versus the air in the parking lot, versus the air at a bus stop in downtown St. Paul, and we are head and shoulders cleaner than either one of those outdoor environments. We're 7 months into a one-year exemption. When St. Paul, I wish Mr. Thune was here, led a campaign for a strict smoking ban in St. Paul, we had a year exemption. They gave us 7 months of it, cut us off. Basically, our $53,000 that we spent on the Ramsey County ban totally evaporated, disappeared. We got nothing for it. We spent, at the time St. Paul came in with a strict smoking ban, we spent another $7,000 for a total of $73,000 involved in trying to deal with maintaining our customers with basically different bans from different entities, different municipalities. So we had $7,000 in the outdoor patio with heaters, noise suppression, because we're in a residential neighborhood. People outside smoking on the street caused horrendous problems with our neighbors. We had $73,000 in it to date. The last move by St. Paul, we dropped in sales 14%, which is a big percentage drop. And we fared much better than a lot of others because we had such a strong food base. Others in my peers in the business with less of a food base just got decimated, absolutely destroyed. There is absolutely no doubt that smoking bans impact business in the hospitality industry, and there's nothing you can do about it. So we had $73,000 in when the new mayor of St. Paul basically pulled the ladder out from under us. And that's basically the exemption thing. People in my business who are good neighbors and are responsible. We had no smoking in our restaurant 8 years before any of these smoking bans came up. Our restaurant area was smoke-free. 2.5 years ago, we took trans fats off our menu voluntarily because we think, you know, we're ahead of the trends. We know what our customers want. And it's ridiculous to think that operators are going to make the kind of investment in HVAC and separation and outdoor patios and things like that without having some kind of guarantee that that's it. Nobody's going to come in and undercut it. This is, you know, everybody's on the same playing field. It was interesting when this smoking legislation first came to the Minnesota State Legislature, that I did something wrong. The main reason for bringing it to the body was to create a level playing field. And now, because people are looking at alternative, more common sense approaches to secondhand smoke, all of a sudden it becomes one where we don't want that level playing field. The smoking ban proponents were the main people that wanted a level playing field. So my position is that you need a level playing field. The preemption has to be in the bill to allow people to even consider making the kind of investments they need to bring their spaces to create a better, healthier air environment. Places, and I was actually kind of pleased that the Olmsted County people was here. I spent a couple of days in Olmsted County working with the people down there. In Olmsted County, 5 cities in the county all had their city councils send letters to the county commissioners. 5 out of 7 Rochester city council people sent their own private letters. The Chamber of Commerce of Rochester sent a letter to the county commissioners, all telling them, leave the ban alone. There's no problem. There's no complaints. Leave it be. You know, the retailers in our area can work with it. The hospitality people are working with. There are no complaints. It's a solution looking for a problem. Also on KTTC-TV, they ran an online poll, which you had to be on a computer. You had to have an email address. It took a lot of the bar patrons out of the mix. That poll still came out 65-35 to leave the Olmsted County ban the way it is. With all that information, that kind of feedback from their citizenry, their constituents, the county commissioners voted 5-2 for a stricter ban. Shocked everybody. I was in the audience tonight. They voted. Everybody goes, how can this possibly be? Well, there's an incredible lobby in Rochester. The other point I guess I just want to make, I don't want to drag this on too long, but there is a Minnesota House of Representatives poll online right now that I heard about Saturday. I checked it at 1:30 this afternoon. There are 4 questions that relate to what your constituents think about smoking. The one I'll focus on is number four. Reads, should local governments be allowed to pass a stricter ban than state law? 39.38% yes, 57.35% said no. And I think that is your constituents speaking to you. I hope you're listening better than the county commissioners at Olmsted County. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Mr. Colin Meinhardt. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Colin Meinhardt, past president of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. I'm in here pinch-hitting for former Representative Jim Farrell, who's got a crisis to deal with today, as we've all been shoveling snow for 3 days. But I'd like to read this statement that Mr. Farrell put together for us. We're here today to ask this committee to support the preemption provision currently in the bill. There has been a great deal of discussion in the legislative process, both in the Senate and the other body, about the need to adopt a statewide smoking ban to level the playing field. As I listen to this as a rationale for a statewide ban, it appears disingenuous to suggest a level playing field without preemption. Along with a level playing field, preemption allows small businesses to have clarity in making decisions as they react to the changes that a smoking ban brings. Unfortunately, until recently, there has been little sympathy for small business owners. When I mention small business, I'm thinking of establishments that are locally owned, unlike corporate chain restaurants. When I mention small business, I'm thinking of small neighborhood bars, which are found in older towns and not in newer suburbs. When I mention small business, I'm thinking of places that cater to adults, not children. Places where adults go to drink alcohol and watch a ball game. These small businesses want to do the right thing on behalf of their employees and customers. They want to provide a hospitable environment that is inviting to their smoking and non-smoking customers. Unfortunately, without preemption, there can be no certainty for these small businesses. For example, just recently, the County of Carleton banned smoking, not just indoors, but 25 feet from any door or window, regardless of whether there is occupation. So if you have a second story with 10-foot ceilings, chances are you cannot smoke anywhere outside your building. The Carleton County ban also states that if you build a patio for smoking customers, the bar must prevent smoking in 50% of the patio seating. Now, how does this local law, which is more restrictive than the bill initiated by the chief author, create a level playing field? It does not. Please know supporting preemption does not make you pro-smoking, regardless of how others may think. Supporting preemption shows you possess common sense and are willing to use your common sense for the purpose of establishing fairness. Let local governments have the authority to be more restrictive in other areas if they so desire, such as public property, but please preempt a patchwork of laws that will continue without preemption. Please preempt continued harm and lack of certainty. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Minor. Sheila Cromer?
Pardon me?
May I have those remarks? Ms. Cromer?
I have to ask Mr. Farrell there. There it is.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Sure. My name is Sheila Cromer. I am a research specialist, and I'm also a resort bar owner. Might I ask, how much time do I have left?
4 minutes.
4 minutes? That should be plenty. Okay, I'm here today to oppose the statewide smoking ban. However, if we have to have one, I do currently support the current amendment. You'll have to excuse me. This is the first time I've ever been up here testifying, and I'm not quite used to it, so.
Okay.
All right.
Take your time.
But anyways, what I hear from my customers, we have a resort up on Mille Lacs, and we have a bar and a restaurant. And so I kind of keep them all informed as to what's going on. So I hear a lot. Some of our customers actually are bar owners themselves in Minneapolis, where a ban took effect. They've gone through these the different county ordinances in the city ordinances. They put in walls, they put in this, they put in that. It's very costly, and some of them that are actually in, I'm not going to name any names here, but in Minneapolis County, they just went ahead, let their customers smoke because they're on the border. I mean, they said, what am I going to do? I said, you really did, and you didn't get caught? Sure. You know, so these are things coming from real people out there, you know, my customers. Another one, they used to own the Poodle Club in Minneapolis for quite a while. They just recently sold last year. Big drop in business. I mean, I hear all these horror stories, even from my entertainment people, that all of their business dropped in Minneapolis, but they did find it elsewhere where there were no bans. So they were able to make up that business. So I guess what I'm trying to, the point I'm trying to make here is that I think there needs to be some consistency because there are going to be losers and there are going to be winners if there's not. So, I mean, that would be one way to level that playing field on an, you know, economic basis there if we're all in the same boat. So the other thing I wanted to comment about was the ventilation, and I wasn't prepared to talk about this. I thought we were going to stick strictly to the preemption, but I work with chemicals every day of my life for the last 26 years, and I work with carcinogens, the same ones that are in cigarette smoke. Matter of fact, ones that are even worse, okay? Why is this big deal about ventilation? I don't wear a respirator at work, okay? Does that mean our ventilation at work is no good? We have limits, okay? They're regulated. And to say that you cannot, that there is no safe level of secondhand smoke is just not true, unless, like in the Surgeon General's report, it says they're looking for a zero level. Well, excuse me, you need to define zero. We have instruments that can go down to part per trillion, sub-part per trillion. So I know that in my workplace, those levels aren't zero. And they're not zero in your food either. They've got the same nitrosoamines in your food that you eat every day. Those same carcinogens. Nitrates, they use them for pickling. And then when they combine with your stomach acid, it makes these some of these same identical compounds. So I guess I have a tough time with the secondhand smoke that it cannot be ventilated. My time up?
You did just great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're now going to move to amendments. Senator Laurie?
Yes, Senator Rust?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A43 amendment. A43 amendment deletes page 5, deletes subdivision 5. And on page 7, delete subdivision 4, which are the preemption amendment and the ventilation amendment that was added in the previous committee. And, Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment, and I might speak to it. I'd like to speak to it.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sharon, I think you had a fine bill before that, and a couple of other things were added to your bill, and I do want to commend you for that and for all the hours and hours of public testimony that have gone on about this bill. Just a little bit of history. 11 years ago, 1996, we had the, ever since the Clean Indoor Act bill was passed, we had at that time a bill to restrict youth access to tobacco. And one of the biggest pushes by the big tobacco lobby was to promote statewide preemption because they knew, and even though they didn't testify publicly, they certainly told us on many occasions privately that if they did have a statewide preemption, that the only people they'd ever have to talk to about tobacco policy relative to young people was 201 legislators. Rather than having to go out into every community and deal with the community values that were being expressed by local government officials. We debated that particular issue for many, many hours, and at the end of the day, by one single vote on the floor of the House of Representatives, statewide preemption was defeated. I am sorry to see that it came back in your bill here, and I believe that by removing that, we assert local control over local policies. We allow local governments to have stronger ordinances if it reflects their community values, if it reflects the will of the people as expressed by the elected officials in those cities. Many are our counties, many of whom have taken very courageous stands and been had to take a lot of argument against their stands. And in particular, I note the presence in the audience of the mayor of one of my cities, which has an extremely strong ordinance, Golden Valley. That is their decision, and I think that it should be respected. With regard to the ventilation, we've also heard testimony and received written testimony as well. In particular, I would direct members' attentions to the letter from the League of Minnesota Cities, signed by Marvin Johnson, the president of the League of Cities, indicating some grave concerns with the possibilities of the burden of enforcement of the ventilation language. And so because of that, I offer the A3 amendment to delete those who subdivisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rust. I'm going to speak. Oh, yep. Senator Sharon?
Yes. Thank you. I'd like to speak to the amendments. First on preemption, I guess, and then on ventilation. I appreciate these amendments to the original bill. I think on the issue of preemption, it's important to understand that there's been significant local debate on this issue throughout the state. In both communities that have passed ordinances or counties, as well as others, have really sought for a minimum standard to be set at the state level. And that really is what this bill is about, a minimum standard that allows us to not do less. But it is not intended to preempt local governments from the opportunity to do more if they choose to. On the issue of the level playing field, I just wanted to say that I think that this language particularly creates an environment which improves the competition between. It's not an end-all. There are situations that are unique, and we've heard about those in other testimony around casinos or around border towns. But by and large, where we have the influence to be able to create as much as possible a fair and equitable competitive environment, we've done that. And bars in my community of Mankato have asked that this move forward because of their need to be able to compete with a community just across the river. So this is about a minimum standard, not taking away the authority of cities to do more that they may choose to do. For example, hotels are exempt in the bill that I have in front of you, but a community like Rochester or Olmsted County does not exempt hotel rooms because of the unique character of their community and the nature of the people that they serve as a result of being the home of the Mayo Clinic. We don't normally preempt local units of government from doing more. And most often, local governments, and I know this from being a local elected official in the past, follow and stay with the state regulatory processes. So I'm hoping that in terms of preemption that this committee chooses to return to allowing cities the authority to be more restrictive should they choose to. On the issue of ventilation, I'd like to say that I would want to remind this committee that there's been a great deal of testimony in other committees as well about ventilation. And if you're not familiar with the Surgeon General's report or ASHRAE's reports, it's clear that that those reports of scientists, scientific group after scientific group after scientific group, is telling us that ventilation is not the solution to the problem. Its adverse effects of secondhand smoke simply cannot be controlled by ventilation. And it diverts local resources, that's why it's here in front of this committee, to maintain a regulatory process that really does not, for the cost to the businesses and to government and having to really oversee the ventilation process, is not in keeping with the benefit. Again, the Surgeon General has reviewed the science on ventilation and has clearly stated that that ventilation is not able to reduce the toxins, and the toxins are much more significant than nicotine, which is also addressed in this HVAC amendment, talking about reducing nicotine to 10 units. That still is a dangerously high level of nicotine. And doesn't speak at all to the other toxins that are related to the issue of secondhand smoke. It's an enormous expense to owners. It's hard to enforce, and we have no known assurance that we'll have value. So those are some of my thoughts that I'd like to add to the discussion about eliminating the section on ventilation.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Senator Vickerman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, the way I look at the bill, you're striking out subdivision 5 on page 5. All the way.
That's correct.
That could be all the way down to
Senator
10. That's your amendment. The second part, you get rid of local, what I call local control. I came to this committee with mixed feelings just how I'm going to vote on this bill, and I still have those mixed feelings, because I think there's a way to compromise. I've been around a long time, and I think we can compromise. I have to take my position. I represent the corner of Minnesota, and I have one state. Walk across the gravel road, you'd be in the next state. You walk the other way, you'd be in the next state. I've got an awful lot of small bars that will go under. I know they'll go under. So I'm not too sure that that's a wise thing to do, and I'm trying my darnest to get income out in my rural district. So I'm a little bit hesitant. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on this bill yet. I promised my constituents that I would probably vote no, but I'm always willing to compromise if the bill goes along and we can make it maybe better. But by taking these two articles out of here makes it awful tough for me to support the bill.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman. Any other comments? Senator Gerlach?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest, aside from the whole issue on the bars piece of Subdivision 5, and we had a lengthy talk. I serve on the Jobs Committee, Senator Methven's committee, where this amendment went on. I have a little bit of a problem. I mean, we had one committee. We spent 3 days on this bill. We had a long list of amendments. This is one of, I believe, four that went on. After lengthy discussion about the impact on jobs and the economic impact of this, and I think there were some compromises trying to be made with this, and now we get to the next committee. We're just going to kind of pull that out and undo that. But aside from that, now we're looking at this, I think Senator Vickerman made some good points on Subdivision 5, and I would agree with him. I would oppose your amendment on that on those grounds. You know, there's a schedule here about you know, how this works. I thought it was a pretty reasonable compromise. There was a lengthy number of amendments offered, a range of things, and this is the one that finally got the votes. Finally, where enough people on the committee said, okay, that seems to be reasonable. So I guess I'm disappointed that the first thing out of the chute, the first amendment, is to pull that out. The other item is on the preemption. I thought that the testimony that a lot of the folks made a lot of sense, and that is that if we're going to, you know, we have this patchwork of different laws. We're trying to avoid that. We always struggle with this local control. Does that mean, you know, sometimes we come here and we redefine that meaning controlling the locals? You know, I mean, it always seems to be this tug of war between when is it appropriate for the state to have a blanket rule for the entire state and when is it up to the locals? And in this case, I think it's real clear that a statewide preemption makes a lot of sense, because you are going to avoid that whole, you know, that whole patchwork that we're trying to avoid. So in this case, I can't see why we would want to just have this statewide center and then throw it open and have it be the Wild West out there, city by city. It's just the issue will go on and on and on. And I think we should settle it here and say this is the law of the land and let everybody operate knowing what the playing field is out there. So, Madam Chair, respectfully, I'd have to urge members to vote against your amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gerlach, Senator Vickerman, I certainly respect your opinion, and I respect the work that was gone on in other committees. This bill would not have come to this committee if it had not been for the ventilation and the preemption amendments that were offered in other committees with jurisdictions otherwise. So, in a sense, even though those two amendments came to this committee because of that, members are going to be free, to offer whatever amendments they like. I think that it's always been the argument for asserting control over local governments to talk about a level playing field. I find that argument not particularly compelling with regard to the ability of local governments to date to be able to, within state law, to have very strong ordinances reflecting their community values. This is not just respect for local government control. I mean, even though cities are certainly the creatures of the state, it's not just to respect the limited ability that we give them to enact their own local laws. It is respect for the values that those local ordinances with regard to smoking and, quite frankly, with regard to youth access to tobacco. The state law in that regard is a floor. It is not a ceiling, and so should it be with the with a ban that protects workers in the workplace and prohibits smoking. The ventilation issue may have well been an issue that had a lot of discussion. We allowed people to speak about it here, too, because this is the issue that came to this committee. All of us have been following the discussion and the testimony. It's been hard to avoid it. It's been an important discussion. And I simply reject that amendment that was offered in the other committee, and that's why it's included as part of my A43 amendment.
Thank you.
Chair Lowry.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I would simply speak to the issue of ventilation as being appropriate for this committee because, as you've heard from the testifiers, there is an enormous economic cost to local government for the enforcement of ventilation. And the testimony that talks about the scientific research and the research from ASHRAE that indicates that it really cannot provide relief from the toxins of secondhand smoke suggests to us that we have the data that says it's not helpful. But then we have a requirement an allowance for ventilation that requires local enforcement to spend resources to do something that the science is telling us is not helpful in solving the problem. That's the essential issue for this local government committee to hear, that there's an enormous cost for local government to do something that the scientists are saying will not produce a benefit. And the second thing I would like to say about the preemption is that we're talking about, in this bill, a minimum standard that allows, as Senator Rest said, for the values of the community to be heard. And then finally, I'd like to say, if you would just extend me the privilege of saying to you, Senator Rest, in your language for your amendment, you are deleting language, but it may be necessary to reestablish language that says that nothing in the sections prohibits statutory or home rule charter, if that would be agreeable.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Sharon, for bringing that to my attention. In deleting the preemption language, I do need to amend to modify my amendment to include the reinsertion of subdivision 4 from a previous engrossment, which reads subdivision 4. I don't know what the correct number would be, Council.
Chair, I believe it would be 4. It would just replace the existing 4.
Subdivision 4 to insert then local government ordinances, nothing in sections 144.414 to 144.417 prohibit a statutory home rule charter city or county from enacting and enforcing more stringent measures to protect individuals from secondhand smoke. So it just reinserts their authority rather than remaining silent on it. So I would modify my amendment to include that language of inserting that subdivision, deleting the present subdivision 4 and reinserting, adding a new subdivision 4, which reinserts the language before the preemption language was adopted.
Mr. Chair.
We don't need to vote on that. I'm just modifying my
Okay, we don't need to
amendment.
Vote on that. Does everybody understand the amendment to the amendment?
I want,
Senator Brickman.
I'd like to have you tell me what you're doing with that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vickerman, in the previous committee, the language was that was deleted was the language I just read to you, that local governments had the authority to enforce more stringent measures. And the preemption language was inserted. And now I'm doing a switch. I'm taking out the presumption language and putting back in the language that previously had been deleted, not changing it, just inserting it back again, so that local governments can have more stringent ordinances.
Okay. Senator Roebling's been...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Senate Counsel could help me understand something. On 522, it says bars. And then it goes on 527 to say, for bars with alcoholic beverage sales of 40% or less of total gross sales. What is a bar? To me, this sounds like it's probably a restaurant that sells liquor. And so I don't understand, if you have less than 40% of gross sales in your revenue, the other 60% is coming from somewhere else. If it isn't food, what else would it be? And then would we call it a bar?
She's still taking
Senator Roebling, this will be a moot point if this amendment is passed, so maybe we'll – are you trying to figure out whether to vote for this amendment or not? All right, Council.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, presumably the rest would be food. I mean, a bar is not defined, I don't believe, but I think everyone understands a bar is a place that sells alcoholic beverages, and they either sell alcoholic beverages or food, and sometimes both. And if the alcoholic beverage sale is 40% or less of total gross sales, the first time frame kicks in and it goes up from there. But presumably the other 60% would be food. Primarily food. They sometimes sell novelty items as well, but primarily food.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Gerlach?
I'd like to request a roll call vote on the amendment.
Okay. Senator Roebling again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am having trouble, Senator Rest, with your amendment because I really... don't like the idea of a patchwork system of ordinances. And one of the reasons my municipalities have not passed smoking ordinances is because they keep telling me they want the state to do it, so there's some consistency. And so I am looking for consistency. I am having trouble with this ventilation provision, however, when I realize that they're really talking about restaurants too. And I don't know if there's any further clarification you can provide for me, but by putting them both together, it has become a difficult vote for me.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd speak in favor of Senator Rest's amendment, and perhaps I can address that issue a little bit if in fact, Senator Rest's amendment fails.
The city that I reside in will have a significantly weakened smoking ban, smoking ordinance, based on the state law. And in Bloomington, Senator Rest had identified, or one of the witnesses had identified local government officials that were here today and given them credit for some of the groundbreaking work that they've done. And we have some Bloomington council members here today as well, and I think they've been visionary and helped break the ground. And I think they have what has become a very popular ordinance in the city of Bloomington. And I'd hate to see the work of the committee here today weaken what residents in Bloomington desire to have as their public policy. And so I think in this circumstance, I would speak strongly in favor of allowing local units of government to, as Senator Rest said it better than I could, reflect the vision and the priorities that their community espouses. So I would, again, speak in strong favor of this of this amendment and hope that we can continue to improve the bill.
Senator Day?
Mr. Chairman, and to when we talk about local government control, what you're talking about is having a level on it and saying, okay, you can do things to people above that, but you can't go below it. That's not local government control. You're not doing anything for your local city council except telling them that the state is telling them, here's the bar, and you can do some things above it, but you can't do anything below it because we at the city state government know better. And we're going to pass a bill that goes across the entire state of Minnesota because we, and if anybody says that, and maybe when this gets to the floor in the final vote, I might be voting for it, but if somebody was to tell me, well, Dick, you're really courageous because you're voting for something that 80 or 75 or 80% of city people, most of them who don't smoke, want, as we take, that's not courageous at all. That's not courageous at all. We're gonna take the rights of one heck of a lot of people away. This is a majority mentality over a minority of a few people that smoke. And granted, they maybe won't be able to smoke outside pretty soon. They probably won't even be able to smoke at a racetrack someday. It worries me. People are into what I eat, what I drive. I mean, I can see somewhere down the line somebody say, oh, I got to drive a four-cylinder car. I mean, I'll tell you what, we're headed down the path here that I have a hard time for government telling everybody what government can do for them. Why not let cities decide? Why not let restaurants decide? In Owatonna, we got a smoke restaurant and we got a non-smoke restaurant. And I'm going to tell you what, I go to the non-smoke restaurant. And I also, if I want to have a beer and there's somebody smoking in it, I go in and have the beer. Is there something wrong with that? Is that un-American? I'm going to tell you. So it says, well, no, we're going to allow that. Well, and we always get into the health costs. And we always get into the health costs on everything. Everybody that comes to the state of Minnesota says, we're going to save you $400 million here, $400 million here, $400 million here. It's remarkable. It's a remarkable place that we have, and I think that when we all somewhere in our lifetime, we're going to wonder how many rights are going to be taken away from just normal people that go out and work for a living, that want to go in someplace after work and have a cigarette and have a beer, and the other people that are sitting there don't even mind it. They don't mind it or they wouldn't be there. They got to be idiots to be sitting next to somebody that's smoking a cigar or a cigarette or whatever. But you know what? They've been doing it for 50 and 100 years, I think we have. And they haven't had a problem with it. We keep rolling and we're going to, bar owners, I feel sorry for you because I tell you what, we went from whatever, we're going to 08, we'll have it down to
to a little bit of nothing pretty soon, and people that do have spent a lot of money in their lifetime and opened up a business, and they run their own business, and government tells them how to run their business. Granted, if I was in it, I'd figure out something new and let somebody else pay the taxes in the state. So I like the amendments that were put in. At least we had a shot at something that was halfway decent, a little bit of a compromise for a little period of time. Just a little period of time. Give us some people a little room. But we're now saying to all of my people in my district, this is it. But if you want to get more stringent, like you can't smoke in the patio outside, we'll let you do it. Well, that's not courageous. To Senator Rest, that's not courageous. This is probably the easiest vote to vote on the other way, because you'll be with 75-80% of the people that don't smoke, and they want to clean the world up, and the rest of us are just out here. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Day. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to weigh in on this, because I sat in on the other committee that incorporated the ventilation portion of this amendment, and I know through life's experience working as a welder and for 18 years that they can ventilate. There is such a thing as positive pressure, negative pressure, engineering of air handling systems that can control it. You see them in your hospitals all the time. They can take out microbacteria. So I know this can be done, and I think, you know, I supported this because, like Senator Vickerman, I don't feel that I was elected to come down here and to put people out of business. You know, I came down here certainly to make the life of employees and patrons to bars and restaurants better, and I felt that this was a good compromise, that it would make it better. Will it be perfect? Probably not. You can't eliminate 100% of all potential elements in any air other than probably in the area that I talked about before where they test stuff, you know, medical stuff. But, you know, life isn't perfect. The world isn't perfect. Air is never going to be perfect. But we can make it better. You know, I think that the ventilating systems can work. You know, I'm probably the only senator here that spent hours, along with my legislative assistant, calling ventilating companies and trying to get information, you know, on them. But for some reason, they're reluctant to, probably for political reasons, to step forward and say, yes, we can ventilate this. You know, we have such opposition here to ventilating systems and to the total aspect that somebody should be free enough to be able to smoke, that they probably didn't want to step forward and have their company name associated with the potential that that we can make life better for employees. And then, you know, so out of life's experience, I know that there is the possibility that we can make life better for patrons and for the workers in these areas. But the other thing that I'd like to talk a little bit about is the local control. You know, while the vast majority or a significant portion, I should say, of our population currently is under smoking ban of one sort or another, it is a patchwork of efforts. And but I would gather to say that the vast geographic area of this state isn't covered under a smoking ban of one kind or another. And the local legislators and jurisdictions are asking us to provide leadership. And I guess I feel that what we do here should do that, provide the leadership and provide a level playing field as on this issue. So, you know, if we go again to allowing local units of government, local jurisdictions to go above what we do here, we'll have sidewalks and trails potentially, parks and certain parameters of doors that people will no longer be able to smoke in. And we'll have just exactly what we have today, only at a different level. We'll go from here to here. And that would be disappointing to me that
All we would be doing by this whole action, by this whole bill in itself, is taking this argument to another level. And the author of this bill has said herself that this is a minimum. That concerns me. We've set a minimum here. We're going to allow more control from this point forward, and that really bothers me about it. So I support the bill. You know, I support the state Senate providing leadership, but on a level playing field and by not putting some businesses out of business.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I think the momentum is going in this state and in the country really toward a total ban. So I think Mr. St. Clair made the best argument about why we shouldn't allow ventilation systems, because bar owners like he did can spend a lot of money on expensive ventilation systems and find out that then the municipality, the state, whatever, 2 years, 4 years down the road goes to a total ban. And I think that very well could happen if we don't pass this bill this year, which I'm hoping that we will pass this bill this year. Also, this the whole issue of I don't think that we can – I mean, who do we believe about ventilation systems? I mean, when we have people like the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers – the national and international standard-setting body for indoor air quality, basically saying that the only effective way to eliminate health risks associated with indoor exposure to secondhand smoke is to ban smoking activity, that ventilation technology may help reduce the irritability and the smell of smoke but does not eliminate the cancer-causing chemicals. And that's the issue, is that these are cancer-causing chemicals. They're dangerous for the patrons of the bar. They're dangerous for the employees of the bar. And, you know, we could argue about the economic impacts as well. I think that's most of what I've seen. There may be isolated incidences of bars that catered mostly to smokers having a difficult time. But in the vast majority of cases, people have just adjusted to a smoke-free environment and do their smoking at home or elsewhere. Or maybe they should quit. It'd be another good thing. So, Madam Chair, I applaud your amendment, and I intend to support it.
Thank you. Any other comments from legislators? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Senator Rust has moved that her amendment, as amended, pass. All in favor, no. Raise your hand.
Roll call.
Clerk will take the roll.
Senator Rust?
Yes.
Senator Lori?
Yes.
Senator Gerlach?
No.
Senator Betzel?
Yes.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator Larson?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
No.
Senator Vickerman?
No.
6-5.
The amendment passes 6-5.
Thank you, Senator Lori. Senator Lori, I'm going to call on you. I thank you for chairing the meeting during that amendment, but I believe you had a comment you wanted to make about some of your local officials, and I invite you to do so now.
Thank you. Yes, I found that I couldn't speak while holding the gavel, but I did want to mention that Mr. Meinhardt mentioned Carleton County's very stringent example, and Carleton County is in my district, and has the distinction of having Moose Lake City in Carleton County. They are the first city in the state to go smoke-free. Cloquet has also adopted smoking ban. And I could not go home to these folks and tell them that I had preempted their very stringent local ordinance. I would have a great deal of trouble with that. So I applaud Senator Rust's amendment, and I'm glad that it passed.
I need to go to Carleton County to smoke my cigarette.
There are some other amendments. Senator Lori, did you have an amendment you wanted to offer?
Yes, I have a couple of...
Whatever one you want to do first. I have two from you.
Yes, I have A32.
A32 amendment.
should be coming
being
around.
Passed out.
This is really a housekeeping amendment. It is dealing with nursing homes and boarding care homes. These are people's homes, and this amend, this smoking ban never really intended to go into people's homes. They are currently operating with smoking rooms oftentimes, and these smoking rooms are regulated by state and federal law currently. And the current language could be construed as to require these boarding care and nursing homes to install new ventilation systems. My understanding is that was never the intent of this legislation, and we have a clarification that as long as these are maintained in accordance with applicable state and federal laws, they will be fine. So, Senator Sharon.
Senator Sharon, do you have any comment on this amendment?
No, I'm supportive of the amendment. This amendment would have been an author's amendment, excepting that this was not presented prior to the first hearing, so it would have been a part of the original bill if it had been presented to me early enough.
Is there a further discussion of the A32 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Lurie, did you have another amendment?
Yes, I have an A39 amendment being passed out.
H will distribute the A39 amendment.
This amendment really cleans up the and eliminates the task force that was necessary to study the effects on the gambling industry. The study of the effects of the gambling industry, I need to say, still will occur. It's just that it will be done by the Gambling Control Board in cooperation with the Commissioner of Revenue rather than by this task force. I've spoken with, we've spoken with Tom Barrett, the head of the Gambling Control Board, and it is in his plan right now to go ahead with a study of the gambling industry. I've spoken with several people from the industry, and they appear to be comfortable with this change as long as we are, which we are, still going to have a study of the impact on gambling.
So, Senator Lurie, just a question. The study of the impact on the revenues from charitable gambling is, as your understanding, is part of the Gambling Control Board's strategic plan already. So they're saying that a task force is superfluous in order to get that data.
That's right, Madam Chair.
Is there any discussion on the A39 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I need a little comfort zone.
Okay.
We're going to be home. I'm going to be home in the field by the time this thing gets around. So how will we even know if there's an impact? The time frame on it?
Mr. Chairman, the Gambling Control Board has indicated to us, even in their testimony before us when we had our overview in the gambling subcommittee, that they were already undertaking gathering data from the statewide on this issue, and so they expected to report to us. So other people didn't really know that in other committees, so the task force, they're saying to us now, is not necessary because they're going to be doing it anyway.
Well, Madam Chair, did I misunderstand Mr. Barrett, or did I hear him say that pull tabs in those little places have gone down 25% or 30%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman.
That's close.
I know, you are Mr. Chairman to me. Mr. Barrett had indicated that they did have some data showing that, but that it was not conclusive yet, and so they were going to be doing a thorough study on it. I mean, and they're collecting it as, you know, right now. So a separate task force just would only be looking at the same data that Mr. Barrett and the Gambling Control Board is looking at. Senator Lurie,
yes,
am I interpreting that correctly?
The recommendation is due January 31st, 2008, under the amendment, same date that it is under the plan where the task force existed. It just really was unnecessary to convene a task force on this issue when the Gambling Control Board was already planning on doing this work.
Is there further discussion of the A39 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there other? Are there other amendments? Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have the A40 amendment. And while it's being distributed, I'll describe it, Madam Chair. I think it was 3 years ago in the Human Services Bill, which is about 900 pages long, there was a small provision that prohibited smoking on locked psychiatric units. And in my other life as a lawyer, I've spent the last 27 years working with people who are persistently mentally ill and are often on locked psychiatric units. I'm not seeking to repeal what we passed. However, I'm trying to offer a very narrow exception because typically what happens is that these individuals come in, many of them smoke. I know they shouldn't, but they do. They come in into a locked unit, often a very psychotic state, and they're very difficult to deal with. And the fact is, once they get discharged, they're probably going to start smoking again. But it's expecting a lot to get them to quit cold turkey when their life is pretty much in a crisis. This basically says that if, in the opinion of the treating physician, the benefits to be gained in obtaining patient cooperation with treatment outweigh the negative impacts of smoking, they can let the patient have a smoke. Basically, in other words, if you take your medications, you can have a cigarette. And that will often, it's therapeutic, it'll help the patient get through the crisis and like that. The alternative, frankly, is that some of these patients are smuggling smokes and matches onto the units. They're going into the back rooms, they're smoking, it's a fire hazard, and it's causing more problems than solving the smoking problem. So as I say, this is a very narrow exception here, and the physician has to make the call whether in an isolated incident it's worth letting the patient have a cigarette when there's really no option available. That's my amendment.
Senator Betzold, I had looked at, and this, I just have a question for you on it. Mm-hmm. I had looked at that, that you're striking or you're reinstating the stricken B there, and yet I had some questions about that as well until I noticed that a lot of it had been moved to, the language had been moved to Section 9, Subdivision 1. And I wonder if it's necessary to reinstate the stricken B, since smoking by participants, you know, for science, was just moved to a permitted smoking section out of the section that deals with healthcare facilities and clinics. And I respectfully submit that you do not need to reinstate the stricken B because the effect of that is in is on page 5, Section 9, Subdivision 1.
Well, Madam Chair,
is there something?
Yeah, stylistically, I don't know where, you know, it could be long. Maybe it belongs under Section 9. Section 9 does deal with a scientific study, and frankly, we're not talking about situations where the scientific study is being done. We're simply talking about a crisis situation where the physician says, look, you know, I'll let you have a cigarette if you'll just, you know, quit screaming. Calm down. And that's what
Senator
happens.
Betzel,
so, but where it's placed, I'll defer to counsel.
Point, that it seems to me that your new language,
Madam Chair,
beginning, just a second, and then you can correct me, Mr. McGowan, that your new language on.
We're reinstating the B, not the stricken language.
Oh, just the
letter B.
Oh, the letter B.
Letter B. Yeah.
Letter B. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. B. The letter B. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Is there a discussion of Senator Betzel's amendment? Senator Sharon, first of all.
Yes. Thank you. First of all, I want to say I was really appreciative, Chair Rest, that Senator Betzel informed me of his interest in this amendment ahead of time and allowed me to have some time to reflect on what it was that was being proposed. And so thank you for that. It was very generous of you to do that. I really am not in support of this amendment, however, having thought about it. I think that, and I work in the field of psychiatric mental health in inpatient locked psychiatric units, so I am familiar with the situation that's being described. And the truth of the matter is that the patients can go out under supervision on one-on-one and smoke. They have a provision for nicotine patches for patients in the inpatient setting. Nicotine does interact negatively with medication, and it is something that is a concern in terms of being able to establish reasonable levels of various psychotropic medications. The mentally ill are not allowed other addictive substances while they are in an inpatient psychiatric unit, simply because they are addicted to them. We are locating patients at that time in settings that are ideal in terms of supporting a person from withdrawal from substances that are addictive. In addition, alternative coping patterns can be taught during this time other than using mood-altering substances to deal with issues that are confronting them. But mostly I'd encourage you to know that these are enclosed places as well, and that the goal of the essential goal is to create workplaces and places for people who work that are protected from secondhand smoke.
Madam Chair, if I
Senator Betzel.
If I could just respond. Not all these patients are allowed out, though. I'm talking about the patients when they come on, and some of them are very psychotic. No psychiatrist is going to let them off on a pass because they're going to run. So they usually are. And that's the time period when, you know, the negotiations are quite tense.
Senator Betzel, counsel informs me that we need to just as I made a huge assumption about what B meant, mm-hmm. that we do need to reinstate the stricken A
right.
for the very same reason.
Free line 29.
So if okay. you will incorporate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'll incorporate
in
that, ma'am. In
order okay. Is there further discussion? And Senator Betzel, back to you, or is there further discussion by others on the A40 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The chair's in doubt. All those in favor, please say, raise your hands. There are six ayes, so the ayes have it, and the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, don't we get to vote no?
No.
I was just counting.
All those in take the no votes.
I counted the yes votes only. All those opposed to the amendment, please raise your hand. And so there are four no's. So the ayes have it, and the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas, do you have an amendment?
Madam Chair, yes, I have the A38 amendment.
I'm not going to get the second half smoke to anybody else.
Wait until the author has the amendment.
Oh, Madam Chair, I have a copy of it.
I mean, the author of the bill. Senator Pappas moves the A38 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This deletes on page 7, section 12. For some reason, the previous committee determined that this bill should go to the that there should be some discussion about the dislocated worker program. And there are two things. I find that kind of ironic. First of all, because the unions that work in the bars and restaurants are in support of a smoking ban. They see it totally as a health issue. So I think that's one point. And the other point is that according to some of the materials that we have, there have been numerous studies House Research did a review of economic studies that found no significant decrease in bar restaurant sales. The Minnesota Institute of Public Health said that their study on the economic impact of smoking ordinances showed there was no economic impact. So even though obviously there are anecdotal evidence, overall it has not had an negative economic impact. So I think this is unnecessary to it would send this bill to another whole committee, the Finance Committee, and I think we should delete this so that it doesn't have to do that.
We have the A38 amendment in front of us. Senator Sharon, do you have a comment?
I'm supportive of the amendment.
Thank you. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is an amendment that was put on a committee that I and Senator Gimsey serve on. This was the Jobs Committee, and this amendment was offered by Senator Tomasoni, and this is the Policy Committee for the Finance Committee where this would go. The committee debated this at length. We spent, 3 hours on this. We spent a lot of time on different versions of these types of amendments. This is the one that was the committee thought in its wisdom was a good compromise, a good, they wanted his committee. There was some question and debate about whether this is going to have an impact on workers. There's certainly it's a major dimension to this debate. And to just assume one way or the other is probably not prudent, but rather Senator Tomasoni offered this amendment, and he serves, like I say, he serves on the committee. It was the wisdom of that committee that they wanted to take a further look at this. It didn't go straight to the Finance Committee. Instead, it came here first, but the idea was it would go on there and there would be a further discussion of the impact on the jobs in that Finance Committee. And I just think that to undo that now, Senator Tomasoni is not here to defend it. I don't know if we should call for him to come and be able to talk about what his rationale was. I don't know that we should do that. But I just would speak strongly in favor of keeping this in here so that we can have a thorough examination in a committee, in the committee process here, that we shouldn't just try to speed something along, but if there's a dimension to a bill, a committee chair has requested to see this. It's his amendment. I just think it's disrespectful to his wishes. I think it short circuits the full committee process on this, and I would strongly urge committee members to leave this here. Let's let the Jobs Finance Committee have its opportunity to examine that dimension of this bill.
Is there other discussion? Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I'm going to speak against Senator Pappas' motion, and I do it for this reason. Out in rural Minnesota, you're lucky you can find a job. And you will close some of those small bars in some of my little towns. That's the only job they've got to work at. So I think it's only fair. If that happens, they ought to at least get some kind of training and help them some way to get to a different job. So, Tomasoni had a good amendment. I'm going to have to speak against Senator Pappas reluctantly, but Senator Tomasoni put that in for a reason, and I would ask members to keep it there.
Just for a bit of clarification, it is often the case that when something is inserted into a bill in one committee or removed from a bill in one committee to avoid going to another committee if that particular provision is considered the reason why it would go there. That's often done here, Senator Gerlach. Many times people who introduce bills, for example, that have a rulemaking authority in it know that if they keep rulemaking authority in their bill, it needs to come to state and local government according to Senate rules. And so knowing that, they take rulemaking authority out of their bill and say, well, they think they can live without it. So there are two reasons why amendments that are offered in other committees in a given bill are put there, either to the substance of it, which I believe Senator Pappas spoke to, as well as the process. And that's not that's not unheard of. As a matter of fact, it's fairly common, and is not intended to be disrespectful of the work of any given member of this body. Senator Sharon?
Thank you, Chair Rest. I think that throughout all of the meetings that I've been through, health policy and jobs, commerce, this committee, everybody has been very concerned about what might be anecdotal impact on some workers or some businesses. And I think that that was the spirit of this. But I think that it might assure the committee to know that this there is some redundancy also in this, as was the case with gambling, that this need for displaced workers is already resolved under current unemployment benefits.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Senator Sharon. Is there any other discussion? Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we started the discussion on the bill, I asked kind of the scope of what we were looking at, and you made a good point, and I understand, and I get it on, you know, the provisions that were put in there with the bars piece and the local preemption. Mm-hmm. It's why the bill came here, and it's a section of the bill that this committee has jurisdiction over, certainly, and why it came here. And I get that. The charitable gambling piece, certainly, gambling is part of this committee, and that particular amendment didn't alter the substance of that provision. This amendment, the Pappas Amendment that we have before us right now, I think is clearly different than the previous amendments, and that is that Section 12 was put in, again, by the Jobs Policy Committee, and the chairman of the Jobs Finance Committee has requested this, and this is not why the bill was sent here. And so, again, I see a strong distinction between how the other provisions, the other sections we've acted on and amended, and this particular one here. And I think it's a strong difference.
Senator Gerlach, if the Jobs Committee had not put on the preemption amendment and the ventilation commitment and simply had put on the dislocated worker program allocation of funds, this bill could have gone directly to finance. So they undertook, as is their right as individual members, to offer amendments that were not exactly within the jurisdiction of that committee. And as I mentioned, the testimony that we took was only limited to the public testimony to the amendments that brought the bill to this committee. But members have a right to offer in committee any amendment is germane to the bill and will not be ruled out of order, and I don't think you're suggesting that that would be the case, just that you believe it to be inappropriate.
Well, I'm trying to know if I even say it. Well, inappropriate, that might, it's, I just think that we should respect the work of the Jobs Committee and the Jobs Finance Committee in the aspect of this bill surrounding the impact on jobs.
Accept your comment. Is there further discussion? Senator Day.
Madam Chairman, I'll try and argue the issue, not whether it's...
Thank you.
Just probably 3 or 4 hours ago, in this room, Senator Tomasoni and Senator Bach were arguing about a paper company that had a whole group of people laid off, and that we were talking about extending their unemployment benefits. And we agreed that, you know, move it on to something else, take a look at it, because that very well, you know, the people that got laid off in this paper mill and might need this to get back on their feet and do whatever, and so a lot of us agreed with it. I'll dare say that this bill is going to lay off a lot more people than the paper mill people in the state of Minnesota when it's all done. So I see no reason why not to leave this in as a dislocated worker program. Why wouldn't it be in here to let them take a look at that in that committee and take a look at it and see if there's something they can do for these people or not? I mean, that's the least we could do.
Is there further discussion? Senator Gimsey.
Well, the evidence may be anecdotal that people will get laid off from this, but the reality of it is that employees could potentially get laid off because of the actions of this bill, and this was put in there for a reason. to help those people who became unemployed to find other employment. I guess I would speak against this amendment.
Senator Gerlach.
I'd like to request a roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested. I'll just remind members that Senator Sharon has pointed out that anyone who may or may not be affected by the smoking ban is already covered by the Dislocated Workers Program. Is there other discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Gerlach?
No.
Senator Betzold?
No.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator Larson?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
No.
Senator Vickerman?
No.
There being five yeses and six noes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Are there other amendments to Senate File 238? Senator Lurie?
I move. Is this going to...
Make your motion first, and then I'll comment.
I move that this Senate File 238 be moved to the floor and recommended to pass.
Finance.
If you'll let me comment, Senator Betzel. The we have a letter from Senator Tomasoni requesting that the bill be sent to Finance. We have a statement, a communication to us from the chair of the Finance Committee that it is not necessary for this bill to come to the Finance Committee, even with that amendment on dislocated workers in it. So Senator Lurie's motion is in order, since I believe that the chair of the Finance Committee's wishes should be respected above that of a division chair. You're free to vote no on the motion, but the motion is that Senate File 238 be recommended to pass, and I will ask for a roll call.
We're doing then the motion.
Senator Day.
I thought we did things in this committee. You've been taking great pride that this committee does things within our own committee, and I thought we just kind of took a vote that we're going to send it to Finance Committee. Somebody had an amendment, they offered it, we beat it down, and you're turning around and what you please don't waste my time here,
Senator Day.
Okay,
Senator Day, if I had not had that communication from Senator Cohen, there wouldn't be a question about it. But if he says it is not necessary to come to his committee, then that's what I'm going to abide by. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair,
of Senator
Betzel. The motion is to send it to the floor. Is
that's
that correct?
That's correct.
I see. Okay.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Gerlach?
No.
Senator Betzel?
Yes.
Senator Day?
I'm going to pass.
Senator Gimsey?
Yes.
Senator Larson?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
No.
Senator Vickerman?
No.
Senator Day votes no, too.
There being seven ayes and four noes, the ayes have it, the motion prevails, and the bill is passed. There being no further business before this committee, we're adjourned.
Madam Chair.